Let us open to Genesis chapter 46 as we take up the story of how Israel, the man, and his sons would move from Canaan, the promised land, into the land of Egypt for a period of time. This is exactly as predicted by God to Abraham, that his seed would multiply and that they would go and spend about four generations, about 400 years, in a land that was not the promised land, and they would be slaves there at some point, and would then be brought by God out of that slavery back to the promised land. So the people who are reading the book of Genesis for the very first time are the Israeli descendants who are in the wilderness, having been brought out of Egypt by the mighty hand of God, and on their way to the promised land of their patriarch forefathers, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, or Yisrael. And so the people reading this are seeing how God always keeps his promises. And God is in the mix. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers out of hatred, but God turned it around and used his presence in Egypt to prepare for a huge famine that was coming down the line that would threaten the existence of the Holy Family, the family that will bring the Messiah into the world. So I think it's very appropriate that Jacob has a communication from God that he does need to go to Egypt at this point. He had been told before, when there was a famine, not to go down to Egypt, but to remain in the promised land. But now the timing is right. So let's pick it up in Genesis 46, verse 1. So Israel, that's Jacob, took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba. And he offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Yitzhak. We don't know where he was originally, but I'm guessing he was probably at Hebron whenever his sons caught up with him. And so he leaves Hebron, where his grandfather Abraham and grandma Sarah are buried, where dad Yitzhak and mom Rebecca are buried. And he leaves that city and makes his way toward Egypt, as his son has invited him to do. And he stops at his old stomping grounds, Beersheba, the place where he was born. And he worships God one final time in the land of promise, in the land of Canaan. And God speaks to him. Verse 2, God spoke to Yisrael in visions of the night and said, Yaakov, Yaakov. And he said, Here am I. And then he said, I am God. So I am El, I'm the mighty one, because that's what El has to do with. The God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. So God lets him know this is all inside the parameters of my will. You have my permission to go to Egypt. In fact, I'm directing you to go to Egypt. And I'm going to go with you, which was very important for him to understand. A lot of the peoples of the ancient world were convinced that gods were local or regional, that they lost their control over things the farther you got from their center of power. And in idol-worshipping groups, that was wherever the idol was located. But with the true and living God, these guys are told, don't have any images. And so Jacob has already understood the God that was with him, that took him from Bethel to Paddan Aram, was in both places with him. And then from Paddan Aram to Gilead, he was in both places. And then from Gilead into Shechem, and from Shechem to Hebron, and Hebron to Beersheba or Beer Lahairoi, God has been with him everywhere he goes. Egypt is not going to be an exception, because God is not limited in time and space. And then he makes the promise that Israel will come back to the land. Now, he doesn't mean Israel the man. He means Israel the nation, the people group. And then he promises Israel the man, Joseph will be there the day that you pass away. Which should have been a great comfort for Jacob, because he grieved greatly over the loss of Joseph when he thought he'd been killed. And now he is being advised that he will see Joseph the rest of his life. So everything is good with God about this trip. In fact, it's right on the prophetic schedule. Verse 5, then Jacob set out from Beersheba. We're talking about a journey of somewhere in the neighborhood, depending on the route they took, about 250 miles, I'd say. So maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks journey, depending on how much time they take as they go. So Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, their wives, in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and they came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him. And that must have been quite the impressive sight. You've got this great big family, dad and mom, Leah, is probably who we've got here, and all the boys and their sons and all of the workers that work with them, and all the cattle that might have been up at Sukkot that he decided to take with him on this trip to Israel or to Egypt, and all the sheep that he'd been free-ranging clear up past Shechem and down to Beer Lahairoi. So we're talking about thousands of animals and hundreds of people, because we got the workers involved as well. Verse 7, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. It was like a big city on the move, a big tent city that's making its way to Egypt. Then we have one of our genealogical lists that pop up in the Old Testament, which for some reason get a lot of people all nervous and upset because they don't like all these unfamiliar names. I'm going to give you a clue, and that is most of the pronunciation guides for these names in English don't even come close in some cases to the actual Hebrew pronunciation. So just pronounce it with confidence and move on, all right? That's your best bet. So here are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt. And there's going to be a number involved here. And the number is built around all the men, because that's the line of inheritance. All right? And the grouping here is about the head of each of the families that are going to be called tribes later. And the next level down from them, their sons, which will become kind of a sub-tribe group that all of the Israelis reading the book of Genesis identified with. So all Israelis identified with two of the names, well, actually three if you count Jacob, on this list. They would think of themselves as Israelis because they are descended from Jacob, Israel. Then they would think of themselves as being either Reubenites or Simeonites or Levites because they belong to that particular tribe. And then they would think of themselves as being a Reubenite from the subgroup of Hanok, or the subgroup of Palu, or the subgroup of Hezron, because that would be the particular grandson of Jacob that these guys came from. The reason I'm going into all that detail is because there will be 70 names here that all the people of Israel were fairly familiar with, because everybody got classified by these particular names. 70 is also the number of the Sanhedrin. And I believe it is likely that the 70 members of the Jewish ruling council was based on these 70 tribes and subtribe groups. Okay? So let's just quickly go through them so that you can kind of hear them in their classification. There was Jacob. He's number one on the group. His sons, Reuben, who was Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, Carmi. Then the sons of Simeon, Yemuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yakin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. So everybody except Shaul were from one wife of Simeon, and then Shaul comes from a particular Canaanite wife. Then the sons of Levi, or Lewi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And those three groups get different responsibilities during the time of Moses as to what they do in service to the Lord's tabernacle, because each of the subgroups are designated a specific area of work. The sons of Judah. And so this is the royal tribe. This is actually the tribe of inheritance, because the first three men screwed up in some fashion that got them disqualified. So the sons of Judah, Onan, Shelah. Now, and Onan died in the land of Canaan. We see that in the text here. Shelah was the remaining son. He was supposed to be married off to Tamar, but didn't. And remember, Tamar tricked Judah into producing the heirs of the line by getting pregnant by him. And that brings into the picture Perez and Zerah. And so Perez and Zerah are counted as Judah's sons. And then the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. And so they will come into the picture later, because that's the line of the kingdom and also the line of the Messiah. Sons of Issachar, Tola, Puah, Job, and Shimron, sons of Zebulun, Sered, Elon, and Yahlil. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. Altogether, his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad, Ziphion, Haggai, Shuni, Ezbon, Eri, Arodi, and Erili. The sons of Asher, Imna, Ishva, Ishvi, Beria, with Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beria, Heber, and Malkiel. And these are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. And then we have the sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, the beloved wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Aseneth, the daughter of Potipherah, the priest of On, bore to him. So they're not traveling, they're already in Egypt. The sons of Benjamin, Bela, Biker, Ashbel, Gera, Ne'emah, Eha, Rosh, Mupim, Hupim, and Ard. And I suspect there might be a couple of twin sets in that particular group. Benjamin, by the way, is only about 22 or so when this trip is made. So he either got started very early, or a couple of these kids were born shortly after he gets into Egypt. And the reason they're on this list is because they are part of that first and second generation after Jacob, which becomes the base for the entire nation of Israel, as I was talking about earlier. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan, Hushim. The sons of Naphtali, Yahzil, Guni, Yazer, and Shelim. And by the way, I forgot to mention this. There is no letter J in Hebrew. The reason it gets used in our English Bibles is because it was borrowed from the Germans. And the letter J in German is the Y sound. And so that's why I go ahead and substitute that Y sound when I go through these and try to get them as close as possible to the Hebrew as our English mouths will allow us to do. Okay, so these are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. And so all the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And then the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. And all the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. And so we've got that basis for the Sanhedrin number. We understand it's Jacob plus the next 2 generations after him that form the basis of the ethnic Israeli group. And we are now going to see them start increasing even more greatly in number. So 430 years from now, they are going to be a massive amount of people heading toward the promised land. Verse 28. He had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. So Judah goes ahead as the second command to this family. Jacob is still alive. Once Jacob passes on, Judah will be the leader of this family of Israel. So he goes, hooks up with Joseph, and Joseph makes sure that they go to just the right spot in the land of Goshen where they will be able to claim it as their own and start spreading out. They'll be able to plant crops, graze their animals, build houses, everything. So Joseph prepared his chariot went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a great while. And I am sure that that is a bit of an understatement even. It must have been quite the reunion. A son that was presumed dead and a father that he never thought he'd see again. Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." And Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. The men are shepherds, and for they are keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And when Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" So Joseph is giving them the anticipated meeting that they will have with Pharaoh. And he wants to make sure that his family is going to be in the best possible situation during their time in Egypt. And the fact that they are Semites, that they are people from outside the ethnic Egyptian group, that's partly going to keep them to themselves. But there is one other thing that will make sure that the Israelis can at least start their time in Egypt separated from the Egyptians, and that is what they do for a living. So when Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So Egyptians had this thing about livestock. Ethnic Egyptians didn't really like to be close to livestock themselves, or too terribly close to people who took care of livestock. My suspicion is this thing was an extension of their thing about hair. They did not like hair on their own bodies because hair promoted lice. And they did not like lice. And so by shaving the hair off their heads and off their bodies, they pretty much kept lice from being able to grow on their bodies or live off of their bodies. Well, animals can also be a place where lice live. And so by keeping animals far away, they don't have to worry about that either. So what Joseph is actually doing here is guaranteeing that the Egyptians will let the Israelis alone. They'll give them a place in the land of Goshen where they can live and take care of their animals, and they're not going to come and bother them all the time. And so it's perfect way to start this out. Now, over time, we're going to have a lot of other people, though, in Egypt. There's going to be a migration of a whole bunch of Semites, peoples of Mesopotamia and Canaan, that move into the Delta, and they will actually take over the ruling of Egypt. This is the Hyksos period, the Shepherd King period. And the ethnic Egyptians will basically move south into the upper region of the Nile River system until shortly before the Exodus. And then the ethnic Egyptians are going to push out the non-ethnic Hyksos peoples, the Semitic peoples. And that will set up the story later for the Exodus from Egypt. All right, so Joseph has set everything up perfectly here to help Israel and his brothers get a good start for 430 years of existence in the Delta region. Chapter 47 will set us up for tomorrow. So Joseph went in and he told Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all they possess have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen. And from among my brothers, among his brothers, he took five men and presented them to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to his brothers, 'What is your occupation?' And they said to Pharaoh, 'Your servants are shepherds as our fathers were.' And they said to Pharaoh, 'We have come to sojourn in the land, for there's no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen.' Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock.'" So Pharaoh says, put them in Goshen, give them the best place there. And by the way, since they're good at shepherding, why don't you ask whoever's really good at it to take care of the animals being raised on my behalf? And so Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. So here comes Jacob. He's 130 years old now. He is a very old man, especially by Egyptian standards. And he comes into the presence of Pharaoh, and Jacob puts God's blessing on Pharaoh, basically saying, "May God bless you for what you have done for my son, and also what you are doing for us." And this is a great way for Jacob to start his time in Egypt. And tomorrow, we will pick up exactly there as we continue the story.